Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Kurt Ernst, and I appear today before this Court to present oral arguments on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Terry Macklin. Your Honors, Mr. Macklin submits that the trial court committed reversible error by denying Mr. Macklin's motion to suppress. Obviously, the facts are stated in the brief, but just in summation, the defendant, Mr. Macklin, was present in an area upon which police officers had been dispatched on a report of automobiles being broken into. Upon police dispatching, they did not view anybody breaking into vehicles other than to see Mr. Macklin as the sole individual at the place and time in question at a distance of approximately 70 yards with the officer's headlights turned off.
You know, Stearns, does Mr. Macklin have standing to seek suppression of the gun? If his position is the gun isn't his, the gun was found abandoned in the snow, what Fourth Amendment interest does he have in this gun?
Your Honor, our position would be on behalf of Mr. Macklin that we don't get to that issue if, in fact, he was not properly approached by the law enforcement and put in a position where his Fourth Amendment privacy rights were violated. Hence, obviously, that gets more of the sufficiency of the evidence argument, which I will not spend much time, but that is what we believe is a standing, is that as a common citizen, he had the right to be free from police intrusion, and by police intruding on Mr. Macklin's privacy rights without what we contend was a reasonable suspicion based upon articulable fact, the Terry standard, that he should not have been put in that position to begin with.
But why wouldn't Mr. Macklin's evasiveness, coupled with the report of the break-ins, supply probable cause to stop him?
Your Honor, our position is that, in fact, he was not evasive as it pertains to the initial visual contact between the police officer upon arriving at the scene and Mr. Macklin being observed by him. And again, as I stated in the facts, there was approximately, by testimony at the suppression hearing, about a 70-yard difference, about three-quarters of a football field, at night, with by no means optimal lighting conditions, and the officer even indicated that he had turned off his headlights. So we're talking quite a distance of time. And the transcript of the proceeding also indicated that the officer says that he changed direction. However, what we believe the testimony showed was Mr. Macklin continued forward, but instead of proceeding in a direct line towards the police officer, he instead went behind the building, which was a place that could be accessible to pedestrians. And so, therefore, at that time, our position is, Your Honor, that he was not being evasive, but he was continuing upon a path that he likely could have followed.
Even though the path was, it placed a building between the two of them, and then, you know, he reverses himself again when Officer Miller comes around the back of, you know, follows him. I mean,
and Judge, again, that's the second prong of obviously our attack on the suppression. The first was, did the police have the authority to then back his vehicle up, go to the other side of the building, and then confront Mr. Macklin?
Well, you really don't mean does he have authority, do you? I mean,
does he have a right to confront Mr. Macklin and interfere with his privacy rights without a reasonable suspicion that criminal activity was afoot?
Okay.
Obviously, now, once we get behind the building, and Your Honor states it pretty succinctly, that, in fact, he was told on several occasions to stop. However, during this entire time, Mr. Macklin was walking. He was not running. He was, I guess, not being evasive, I guess, in what the commonsensical sense of the word would be, is that he wasn't running, which, from my experience, has been when they run, they run.
But what's the common sense meaning of stop when it's from a police officer's mouth?
That's true, Your Honor. And again, as what the court drew on is Mr. Macklin did testify at the suppression hearing. Mr. Macklin testified that he was on a cell phone, and I guess claimed he didn't hear the officer until later.
Obviously, yeah, but no cell phone was found.
That is true, Your Honor.
Or the ground.
That is true, Your Honor. However, this was a dark area. It was rather snowy out, so our position would be is that they perhaps maybe didn't look as hard as maybe they could have, in fact, trying to look for such a cell phone. In fact, we also would argue that that would be the case given how they seized the gun in question, in fact, that they actually picked it up without using of gloves, that it was not stored in such a fashion that it could be used later for forensics to show if, in fact, it had been handled by Mr. Macklin. So our position is that, yes, they didn't find a cell phone, but that they didn't necessarily look hard enough, or that the circumstances of the area in question made it to where maybe they could not have looked for it at the time.
Look, you take a look at the totality of the circumstances. You've got a lone figure, Mr. Macklin, on an extremely cold winter night in a parking lot where vehicle break-ins had just been reported. And who are you going to stop? I mean, would the police officer have been doing his work if he thought, oh, well, there's a guy just sort of wandering through this parking lot?
Your Honor, I guess our position would be that he would be, in that at the time, other than seeing him walking late at night in a residential area.
In a parking lot.
In a parking lot, but again, next to a residential area where there are apartment complexes.
Break-ins had just been reported.
That's correct. But again, no break-ins have been observed by the police officer at the time, nor had Mr. Macklin been observed to do anything other than having been walking. So, and again, our position is, again, like the Brown case, is that, again, just because he was in the area standing alone is not enough. And we look at some of the cases cited by the government that talk about flight, and they talk about unprovoked flight. It almost seems like a catch-22 in that, was he provoked by did he see the police officer, or was he unprovoked? Did he not see the police officer? If he did not see the police officer at 70 yards away in the dark, then he, in fact, was not being
You don't think they could arrest him for public intoxication?
If they had the right to approach him in the first place.
No, they always have a right to approach someone.
However, Judge, at the time...
Police can always go up to someone and ask a question, obviously.
That is true, Your Honor.
So if they go up and they... And it's obvious this person is drunk, and then they can arrest him, right?
That's true, Your Honor. However, at the time when the officer first...
Pardon? That's the end of your case. Now, what were you going to say?
Your Honor, our position is that at the time the police first observed him, he could not have been observed to have been drunk.
It doesn't matter. They can go up to anybody in the world, and they can ask him a question, and the person doesn't have to answer. They can go up to him, and if going up to him, standing next to him, they notice that he's engaging in criminal activity, like public intoxication, they can arrest him.
Judge, obviously I would concede that the law does, in fact, say the police have the right to approach. However, again, we believe that the law is, and again, our position still is, that it should be after observing some type of activity.
No, you can't argue that. You don't think the police, they'd go up to anybody on the street. I mean, suppose the police have you ever been approached by a policeman? If they might think you were a witness, something had happened. They go to a bystander, they say, did you see anything? You're saying they can't talk to someone without suspicion that someone is involved in criminal activity? That can't be right. That's just not right.
Judge, I would concede, unless that person feels that they were being constrained where they could not leave.
It doesn't matter whether they feel they're being constrained. It doesn't matter. Police can go up to someone and ask a question. It doesn't matter what the feelings of the person are.
That's true, Judge.
Do you know who the most powerful human being in the world is? Any cop on the street.
That is true, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Judge.
May it please the Court. Good morning, Your Honors. Frank Schaefer on behalf of the United States and trial counsel in this case. The government's position is that the trial court did rule correctly on the police officers having the ability and the right to stop Mr. Macklin. I believe the most important part of the government's case was in the appendix showing the diagram in the back. It wasn't so much even that Mr. Macklin avoided talking to the police officer behind the buildings. When he was first seen on Portsmouth Drive, he took a veer off the sidewalk, which was plowed, to go behind the building. If an officer is in an area looking for an individual or someone who may have did a criminal offense or broken into something, and this is the only person he's seeing, there's no other vehicles out, I think it's his right and responsibility to investigate that individual.
I take it Mr. Macklin was never implicated in the vehicle break-ins?
I don't believe there was ever any other information gathered. It was a phone call that there might be break-ins. When the officer got that location, he was not. No one came out and said, look, my car is broken and do something's missing here. If he saw Mr. Macklin, it proceeded in that direction.
Oh, my.
Okay. Anything more?
Excuse me, Your Honor.
Anything further?
No, Your Honor. Unless the court has any questions for myself, I stand on my brief.
Okay. Thank you very much.